Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
City News.
It's 17:30 GMT. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 City FM. I am Umar Rusanda Amadu. Tonight, I'm here with
Nashika Caesar.
And coming up over the next 90 minutes.
That this government has constructed over 11,000 kilometers of new roads is false and should be completely disregarded. The president should hang his head in shame.
Akufo-Addo's fight against corruption has been a total scam, and that corruption has defeated him and his family. The words of NDC Chair Johnson Asiedun Ketia at what he termed the true state of the nation address. Also coming up, Ketia Market to be reopened tomorrow despite an earlier decision to close it down for a week to allow for investigations. And later on Eyewitness News, we tell you about the Electricity Company of Ghana. It has been on a campaign to recover monies that are owed it. It targeted the House of Parliament, almost closed that institution down, and we're hearing that it is currently around the airport area where lots of businesses are threatened and may possibly be shut down unless they pay what they are supposed to pay. Stay with 97.3 CTFM for more on this and many other stories on Eyewitness News. And in business,
stakeholders within the pensions fund space push for efficient ways of distributing funds in the country to ensure economic growth.
So that's Nashika Caesar. She'll be bringing us more on the world of business in 50 minutes here on Eyewitness News. Eyewitness News is live across Ghana on a number of affiliate stations. In the Western region, we're on Premier 100.5 FM in Takoradi, Beach 105.5 FM also in Takoradi. We're on Sky Power 93.5 FM also in Takoradi. In the Bono region, on Greener 95.9 FM in Suyani, Ashanti on Orange 107.9 FM in Kumasi, Eastern region on Right 90.1 FM in Somanya, in the Volta region on Holi 98.5 FM in Aflau, in the Northern region on Dasuma 99.1 FM in Yendi, Upper East on Word 88.3 FM in Zuarungu, and Upper West on Bugli Radio 88.6 FM in Wa. We are live across the globe on citynewsroom.com. We are live on Facebook. We are live on YouTube. You can let us know what you make of the stories we are bringing you. The WhatsApp number is 0549-986-996. 0549-986-996. You can send tweets using the hashtag CityNewsroom, and the world will hear what you think. Let's settle for details of our stories now. And the first one has to do with the National Democratic Congress. Nashika has our story.
The National Democratic Congress, NDC, is accusing the New Patriotic Party, NPP, of deceiving Ghanaians that a huge percentage of funds the government has borrowed was injected into the construction of roads. According to the chairman of the NDC, Johnson Asiedun Ketia, only 1.6% of over 800 billion cedis have been used for the construction of roads in the country. Speaking at an event dubbed the True State of the Nation by the NDC, Johnson Asiedun Ketia said the government has diverted these funds for personal interests.
The president knows he deliberately misled Ghanaians with this claim because he's aware that only a minute amount of the overall resource influx that has accrued to his government since 2017 has been used for the construction and rehabilitation of roads in this country. The truth is that only an abysmal 1.6% of the total resource envelope of 820 billion Ghana cedis has been spent on roads by this government. Official government of Ghana records show that a whopping 93% of the 820 billion Ghana cedis has been spent on consumption, including Akufo-Addo's 20,000 euros an hour luxurious private jet travels across the world, hired over several months, at the expense of the taxpayer. It is a tragedy that the president will classify routine minor road repairs such as resealing, reshaping, pothole filling, regraveling, and even the silting of gutters as new road construction. The claim that this government has constructed over 11,000 kilometers of new roads is false and should be completely disregarded. The president should hang his head in shame. Apart from the unsustainable debt of the country, the budget deficit, which stood at 6.1%.
That's Johnson Isidro Nketiah speaking at what he calls the True State of the Nation address. He touched there on the economy. Let's listen to the party's position on the NPP government's fight against corruption.
The promise to build 88 district hospitals within a year, Agenda 111 project. The promise to abolish road tolls. The promise to convert toll booths into modern, ultra-modern public toilets on our highways. President Akufo-Addo's silence on corruption in his infamous address was very loud. It was as loud as his guilt. Evidently, corruption had defeated his family and friends. Instead of confronting this canker head-on, President Akufo-Addo has constituted himself into a corruption clearing agent. Ever willing to whitewash himself and any of his appointees who dabble in corruption, even before investigative processes commence. The president's action and complicity have emboldened many of his officials, not least his vice president, Alhaji Bawumia, whose name has come up in multiple corruption scandals, such as the PDS scandal, the Shady Gold for Oil deal, the Stolen Rice scandal, and the famous appearance fee scandal.
So that's Johnson Isidro Nketiah, is National Chairman of the National Democratic Congress, taking a swipe there are the governing New Patriotic Party. The national organizer of that party is Henry Nana Buache. Nana B, welcome to Eyewitness News.
Omaru, thank you very much.
When you take on NDC people and ask them what they did in terms of fighting corruption, they would say to you that they commenced the prosecution of Abuga Pele and others, and that these are persons from their own stock. They've prosecuted them successfully. They've been sent to jail. That is a true fight of corruption. If the same question is put to you as NPP, what is your track record in the fight against corruption? And I'm referring to inner corruption. What would be your response?
Omaru, thank you very much. I think that, first of all, I heard the national chairman for the NDC, and I think that he should not be too, Pedestrian is now the national chairman, and appears that he was just moving around in circles. He said so many things unsubstantiated. And I think for now, he's the national chairman, and he's expected to leave as such. I mean, when we talk of corruption, as you mentioned, yeah, there are certain people in jail as we speak. You recall the NCA. There are almost about 29 cases in court. It's just that maybe you as a journalist, you may have to even find out. We say that the wheels of justice grind slowly. You cannot just rush people through it. I've interacted with a number of people who expect that there should be speedy trial for some of these things, that they want to see some action. But yes, I can point to the NCA action, and I can tell you that there are almost about 8 or so people who are languishing in jail as I speak. I mean, listening to him, you also mentioned of a certain corruption tack on the vice president, especially regarding the oil, gold for oil. I mean, right from this, I mean, he provided not even a scintilla of evidence. He was just running around. As a national chairman, we expect him to do more. Look, this road for oil is really bringing, or is it the case that he has scared that the prices of petroleum products are really coming down before December 2020? Before December 2022, we were buying a gallon of petrol almost close to about 24 Ghana cedis. Now, as I speak, it's almost about 12.9 Ghana cedis, which is almost about 10 Ghana cedis reduction. Is it the case that we are scared about it? Are they not supposed to praise government for that? Because before then, they were lambasting government for high prices of petroleum products. And then we put in a measure which is really bringing this food down, and you are putting a corruption tag on it, no evidence. And he also was going around in circles mentioning some scenarios without any evidence. I think that he should leave about some of these things. He should leave some of these things for his propagandist. He's now the national chairman. For me, what he did was just a comic exercise.
I see. It's interesting that you say that he's been running around. Let me read for you the subtopic on corruption, what he said. He said President Akufo-Addo's silence on corruption in his infamous address was loud. It was as loud as...
You recall.
Just give me a second.
Okay, sorry.
You go ahead. Make your position.
Omaru, when the president was talking, he fundamentally laid this down, that because of how we find ourselves, he's going to move away from the conventional methodology of delivering the message on the state of the nation. He mentioned that we are at a time where people want to hear about the economy. He mentioned that there was a time that people are complaining about petroleum products. He mentioned all of that and said that so he was going to touch rather on the economy and how his government is committed and dedicated in reviving the economy. I was there. I was seated right there. So he before he even made that, he mentioned it, that he is moving away from the conventional way. So if you say that he is loud on it, I'm surprised. And for me, that is what everybody wants to hear now. At this crucial moment, people want to hear what government intends to do, what are the movements of government regarding bringing the hardship down. That is what Ghanaians want to hear. And that is exactly what the president did. And I think that fundamentally, he laid it down before he even delivered the State of the Nation address.
Okay. So in his statement, he said that, and I'm reading from page 12 of his presentation. He says, I put it to you, and he's referring to the president, that there's everything dishonorable with the damning finding by the Auditor General that cash payments totaling 11 billion cedis to caterers who provided hot meals during the 3 weeks of partial lockdown were all retired with honor certificates instead of receipts, and that other COVID-19 related payments to catering totaling 5 billion cedis were neither backed by receipts nor honor certificates. Again, I put it to you, Mr. President, that the government's management of COVID-19 funds cannot be said to be honorable when the Auditor General could not verify bills and validate dubious payments amounting to 37 million cedis by the Ministry of Finance to NGOs and private individuals, water providers, for the provision of so-called free water. You see, Johnson Asenoketia is the one who read the address or made the address, but he was referencing heavily the Auditor General's report, a state institution that's as credible as any other institution that you can find this town. So if he refers to the Auditor General and makes the point, then it is not his words, it's the words of the Auditor General.
Omaru, let me make this point. I am the board chairman for the National Food Buffer Stock Company Limited. Buffer Stock Company Limited was cited in the Auditor General's report. It was cited in the Auditor General's report as not providing some invoices totaling 1.4 million covering some of the foodstuffs that were distributed. And you know how auditing is. They do pre-conference and post-conference. And then, because of the efficiency, the time we found ourselves, some of these way bills were prepared before even these foodstuffs were dispatched. As I speak, now, we have validated all of these documentation, and they have even forwarded them to the Auditor General. At the time they were conducting this, they had not received it. So how can anybody, based on this, and conclude that because maybe you prepared an certificate regarding the dispatch and distribution of food items, it amounts to corruption. I mean, it is so shallow. It is so warped at an analogy. And I'm surprised it is coming from the whole national chairman.
Is it your position that a report from the Auditor General until it is tested and proven should not be taken seriously?
Omaru, no. They are twisting it. That is why I said that I am the board chairman for National Food Buffer Stock. Yes, we were cited in the Auditor General's report. And I requested that I wanted to see the action by NAFCO. And they provided me details. That is why I'm saying that at the time that the Auditor General prepared that, and because of these times, they were moving huge loads, thousands of tons of loads of foodstuffs around. And at the time that we were in that pandemic, you are saying that people should have all documentation ready, prepared. It was going to be impossible, especially when we're even locked down. People had even closed offices and all of that. It was going to be very difficult. So yes, I concede that at the time that the Auditor General was preparing some of these, you know, were requesting for these documentation, it was not there. So what? The NDC chairman is saying that because documentation was not given to the Auditor General, it amounts to corruption. That is why I'm saying that the Auditor General's report is there. But John says, if you look at his construction and how he wants to twist the Auditor General's report, it's so warped, it's so illogical, it's so incompetent.
That our money could not be accounted for. That's illogical and warped, you say?
No, that is what I'm trying to say, that go into it again as I speak today. If you conduct your research into the post-auditing conference, you recall that majority of the institutions afterwards, after the pandemic, after the lockdown, they have submitted all of these documentation. And it is because of the period we found ourselves.
Let's move to other things he said. You have promised to build...
If you would allow me. We have said that before 2020, when we were severely hit by this, the economy was doing so well. And this is just a simple comparison will tell you that we're doing so well. Look, in agriculture alone, if you consider 2013 to 2016, average growth was 2.8%. Under MPP 2017 to 2020, it was 5.8%. Industry, between 2013 and 2016, average growth was 3.3%. 2017-2020, average goods industry was 10.8%. If you consider service sector, 2013-2016, average growth 5.2%. 2017-2020, 7.3%. Even if you consider unemployment rate at the time, this is from World Bank, this data, the World Bank, 2014 to 2016 was 12.92%. 2017 to 2020 was 9.00%. City depreciation, 2013 to 2016, average was 18% under the NDC. MPP, 2017 to 2021, it was 6.8%. If you take sector by sector, we have outperformed the NDC by far.
And even in the corruption sector, you have outperformed, so that the example I gave you, the track record of the NDC, how do you match up?
No, I think that, Omaru, if you, unless maybe you don't want me to flow, I mean, you, if you want to be hear me, but we had moved away from the corruption issue, and I've told you what exactly it is. We have moved, and then we have come to Auditor General's report. I've given you my response. So if I'm telling
in
terms of the economy, I'm coming. In terms of the economy, I've given you some figures, and then you throw in this, such a wayward question.
I take an exception to that. It's a question which you can answer.
The reason why I'm saying that is that...
No, the reason... Nanabi, I have not taken any offense. Please answer the question.
That is fine. I'm done with that. Look, and we have mentioned that, look...
I wanted a clearer answer to that. I have told you what the NDC always points to. I want you to also point to something. and say that this is a track record, this is a legacy that you're leaving in the fight against corruption, what would you point to?
Omaru, when we set up the office of the special prosecutor,
which has not been resourced or retooled,
that can be a challenge, I understand, but
which is a very painful challenge considering that it's been 6 years that you created that office. So really, that wouldn't be something you should be pointing to. If you have an 11-story building with 20 employees, that is not, that's not an office.
No, Omaru, please. If there is a challenge, I mean, there can be a challenge, especially...
So let's leave the ones with challenges. I want you to tell me specifically something you have done and dusted.
Omaru, is it a case that you don't... Because you moved me, the first question you asked when I picked up this interview was about what Eseke Nketiah has said about corruption and how he had centered his own thing around Auditor General's report and had dispatched that already. And I moved into the economy. And I clearly told you that, yes, he said that he was giving a truth to the nation. And I'm telling you that even before COVID, and I've given you some figures, I was moving him to my next action, and you want to bring me back to the very first question you asked me when you called me for this interview. It appears that is where maybe your interest is. I'm surprised. You don't want me to move to other areas?
No, it is not my interest. It is your party that used because corruption as a campaign tool. So I'm sure it is as is your interest as it is my interest.
You even quoted what Eseke Nketiah has said. Eseke Nketiah, fundamental belief and how he twisted the Auditor General's report. I have mentioned, I have dealt with that. And I am sequentially giving you that, you know what? Even the economy, when they mention it, we have done much better than them before the COVID struck and before the Russia-Ukraine.
Since you want us to relate purely what Mosquito Ojena Eseke Nketiah has said...
That is not what I'm saying. I'm moving to other places and then you brought me...
So let me take you to those other places. Let me take you to those other places. He says, in Ghana today, childhood vaccines are in short supply, leading to a measles outbreak. False claims by the president of a global shortage have been exposed as Nigeria had excess vaccines to come to the rescue of Ghana's babies. What do you say to that?
I think that now those cries are over. We have received some vaccines. Parents are happy. I am happy. We all condemned it when we were not having vaccines. We have received them.
But did we peddle falsehood?
Even cholera, and the NDC, they could not even manage it.
That's true. That's why we voted them out in 2016. Then you are in power. Did you peddle falsehood that
now we have vaccines?
No problem. But
we did not have.
But were we inaccurate in the information around the vaccines as a government?
How are we not accurate? As I speak, I have seen that we have taken delivery of some vaccines. I've seen that health workers are very happy. I have also.
And we got this from Nigeria, even though we said there was a global shortage.
Omaru, so what is even if you I want to verify this, but even if you got it from Nigeria, what is wrong with that?
Oh, I'm sure what's wrong with that would be like what Otunfo Osetutu said a few days ago, that you should be forthright with the Ghanaian population. Would you say that your government was very forthright?
There was an outcry of vaccine. We have received vaccine. And Omaru Sanda, the professional journalist, is worried about where we got the vaccines from.
Of course. I would definitely be worried because you have a history with vaccines in this country. Recall the whole shake fiasco of our COVID vaccines. So it's very important that I ask you, considering that you have a track record around vaccine procurement in this country.
Yes, myself, I raised issues about it. I wasn't happy about it. Yes, you cannot be happy about everything. We're so transparent. We said we don't have vaccines. We're expecting vaccines. We have vaccines now. Parents are happy. People are happy. I've seen. I traveled to the north recently. I visited some few hospitals. And yes, people are happy. So that is it. And then, as you know, you also even mentioned about Agenda 111. Look, I visited Sabuba. If you have time, call your people back home. Ask them about Sabuba Agenda 111. I was amazed when I saw the level of development going on there. I visited Sabuba recently, just 2 days ago. And I was happy. It appears that the national chairman is no more traveling. He's become an armchair chairman, so he doesn't know. To go to Chipone is coming up very well. Very well. So I'm surprised about some of these claims that the Agenda 111 is not going on well. And last year, when His Excellency the President was touring the northern part of Ghana, I was with him, myself and General Secretary, and we visited the Sabuba. It was at that stage, it was just at the foundation stage. I went in today and I was amazed by the level of development that Agenda 111 at Sabuba has received. Massive.
Are you really sure you should be celebrating Agenda 111 during President Akufo-Addo's fellow Ghanaian's statement to the nation? He said 80 district hospitals to be completed within 18 months. How many of these have been completed? 88 district hospitals. If you cannot point us to those completed 88 district hospitals in 18 months, or at least hospitals that are 90% completion, which are 88 district hospitals, then you should not be celebrating Agenda 111 in any way.
As I said, I have visited Sabuba.
Just one. What percentage of work did you see?
No, I'm coming.
I was there. Was Sabuba's own completed?
It was at the foundation stage.
Are you serious? Foundation? There, and foundation, when did you see this?
When I got there, it is almost at the roofing stage, and I was happy.
When did you see
and
this?
That is it.
When did you see this? When?
Sabuba.
When? Not where?
2 days ago.
2 days ago. So it's at roofing sheet level.
Yeah, you can go and find out that you have raised it.
And that's one out of 88 hospitals. And you want to take credit for that?
Omaru.
Yes.
I said I am happy because the chairman mentioned, unless maybe you actually deliver the State of the Nation and you want me to be responding to your delivery of the State of the Nation. The national chairman of the NDC says that the Agenda 111 is not going on and it's been halted. And it's a fiasco.
And
I'm telling you,
that is not that true.
Just 2 days ago, I was in Sabuba and I passed by the Agenda 111 District Hospital there. And I'm mentioning to you that last year, when His Excellency the President was touring the northern part of Ghana, I was with him. And I went there and it was at just the foundation stage.
You would have crossed four regions, Nanabi, to go to Sabuba to see a hospital. Within these four regions you crossed, Eastern, Greater Accra.
Particularly for an assignment.
No problem. I'm just saying that.
Exactly. So that is why I'm saying that I've given you an example because this is a statement by the national chairman saying that the 111 is successful. And I'm telling you what I have seen.
There's one very close by, just by our nose here, La General Hospital. You demolished it and said you were going to lift it aground. That hospital still remains a rubble. What do you say to that? And because it all has to do with this plan to build hospitals. And you've traveled four regions to see one.
I will humbly find out the state of this statement you have just put out.
Oh, no. That is public record. Is there?
What I'm saying is that I'll find out about it, the state, and where it has gotten to, and then I'll report back to you anytime you talk to me again. As I speak, I'm not sick with the information to make a comment on that.
Very well. We need to end it here, but there are a few more things that he put out there that I should just at least ask you the last one. He says use the COVID money for elections. What response will you give to that?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that is true. I mean, these are documented. I recall that the World Bank director, I mean, they gave us some funds. He himself said that they were satisfied about how we dispersed it and how we used it. I mean, records are there. So how did we use it for elections? We never anticipated that COVID would hit us. The Electoral Commission never budgeted that it was going to buy temperature guns, never budgeted that it was going to buy nose masks, and then Veronica buckets, and then all of that. We never budgeted that schools were going to be locked down and were going to have widespread nationwide fumigation of all institutions before reopening, and that every student was going to be given pairs of nose masks and sanitizers and all of that. We never budgeted for it, and we saw it. At the time that we even intended to open schools, there were some doomsayers who were saying that we should not and that we are putting our children at risk. And the president said we cannot also be locking away our development and then our children. So he will put in measures to make sure that school reopened. And all of it, we saw it in this country. Didn't we see free water, free electricity?
The free and water and electricity that we have paid, Mosquito says we have been paying for that, and we still continue to pay for that, and that is a problem.
How I wish under the Mahama-made pandemic of Dunso, when he himself put us into that Dunso, and then he was still telling us that we should be prepared to pay more if you want to enjoy stable electricity. I thank God that in the midst of all of these challenges, City FM, your newly built facility, very nice. You are not running on gensets. I recall that earlier on.
Perhaps that could be because Muhammad left us a car partnership with a lower.
Muhammad didn't leave us anything.
He did. He brought that from Turkey. And your government, after everything you said about that car partnership,
you
came. No, Nabi. I don't speak for Muhammad, but I speak for the fact. Nabi, I'm just saying.
No, you don't speak for the country. No, you're saying. You are speaking for Muhammad.
No, the car partnership sitting in Takoradi was brought by Muhammad. And you have gone to renegotiate to bring a newer one, a bigger one. So what exactly what I say?
That 4 years of Mahama, we experienced so. It is also clear that although we are experiencing this economic hardship, we have not experienced power outage. It is so clear. So this is fundamental. If you want to, you know, just put yourself out as a spokesperson for Mahama, that is fine. That is your own palabra.
No problem. It's fine. You can say what you want to say, but the facts remain that
if I make a statement and you rather would want to go the propagandist position of the NDC and how they respond. Because exactly, I mean, every NDC communicator, this is how they respond, right? So if you have also gotten some scripts from them, I don't know. But if I'm telling you...
Narabi, your personal attacks are becoming one too many, don't you think?
Okay. I'm very sorry about that. But
I'm glad you do. I think this is a good place to leave the interview. Yeah.
Because if you allow me to make my point, you can call the NDC.
It's fine.
We've spoken
for 32 minutes. Thank you so much. I appreciate you for the time tonight.
Thank you very much.
That's Henry Nanabuachi. He's lawyer and national organizer of the New Patriotic Party. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTF. And we'll come back. We hear from the NDC. Please stay.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
Let your voice be heard on Eyewitness News on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag Eyewitness News.
Welcome back to Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. Emil Akwensivi in the Sujaman says, in fact, corruption has eaten deep into the moral fiber of the country, but people in authority come to say the opposite. Amisko Spilele in Kasua Republic says, is this what the NDC claims as a true state of the nation? Undoubtedly, the address is statistically insignificant, which has a type 1 error. In fact, they must come again. Kennedy in Onipaya Adie says, Akufo-Addo's government has truly failed Ghanaians. Never again should Ghanaians vote for NPP in 2024. Another message coming through, Baba Chairman. Okay, this one. Alhaji Hamza in Pig Farm says, Umaru, should be said, this government led by President Akufo-Addo has failed totally in the fight in corruption. You can also send your message. The WhatsApp number is 0549-986-996. 0549-986-996. Nashika has some other stories.
Right, the Vice President, Dr. Mahamudu Bawumia, has assured victims of the new KJTR market fire incident of government support. Speaking to the traders after inspecting the scene of the fire, the Vice President announced that the part of the facility that was not affected by the fire will be reopened for business on Tuesday, despite the earlier directive by the board for an extra week of closure.
Medium say, Obedia Dance CSA, Fire Service, any Nadmo, Owe Adia Pa. Because Obutimi Stopi, Ejano, na 33 shops out of 8,000.
I know you agree with me that the Fire Service and Nadmo did well in making sure that only 33 out of the over 8,000 shops were affected. I want to commend the two entities for their efforts during the incident. I know you are not working now because your shops have been closed down. I've spoken to the fire service and they have disclosed that the incident wasn't as a result of an electric fault. Let me assure you that you'll be allowed to reopen your shops from tomorrow.
Because you are too. Mr. Omeni Fire Service for Yakasa, Omosi, Omuni Madekwa Ebae. So, a near electrical fault. So, Omoa Shenina. So Nyamia Dum and China Obubi Lamwa Stati.
The Vice President also assured that the government will strictly implement the recommendations of the committee set up to probe the recent fire incident.
Let your voice be heard on Eyewitness News on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag Eyewitness News.
Let's remain with the issue of the fire that gutted the Kejita market and speak to the Kumasi Traders Association. The PRO for the association is Ruben Ame. Ruben, you're welcome to Eyewitness News.
Thank you, my brother. I'm rather the general secretary, not the PRO.
Apologies, general secretary. Now, this announcement that the market is being reopened tomorrow versus it being reopened in a week, which one works better for you as traders?
Thank you very much. Greetings to your listeners. Opening the market, even if they had opened the market today, we would have loved it. Because, my brother, we traders are really suffering from this close down of the market. Even though, yes, we accepted the 3 days, but any further day that will be added to that 3 days, which is today again, we suffered a whole lot of losses. We've already suffered losses when the fire came. And we do not want to suffer any further losses when those who supervise this shameful disaster are still at post and will be taking their salaries at the end of the month. So we are cool with opening the market tomorrow. We are so happy.
Even though it appears it was a professional advisor, the market remains closed so that the challenges are dealt with. I believe the fire service would have recommended for the facility to be closed. Indeed, the fire service head who spoke to me last week said the market doesn't have a fire certificate. You are, as workers, as traders, comfortable working in a place which does not have a fire certificate, which needs to be investigated properly, which investigation is not concluded. You are still happy to go and do business there, knowing that there's a possibility that there may be another fire outbreak soon.
It is not wholly about the market not having a fire certificate or investigations not completed. At least, if not for anything at all, we expected that within these 3 days that the market was closed, we would have seen actual works of assessment, investigations, and other things going on. We are so much shocked today when we entered the market to realize that nothing has even changed, not an iota of a thing. Has been changed from Wednesday in Sena, where the fire gutted about 54 shops. And the place has not even been cordoned off. The place is still as open as it is. And it's like the 3 days that was given, we don't know whether they were working or not. Now, back to the fire certificate. Working to get a fire certificate, it's not an exclusive thing that should be done, that, oh, you need to do that before you get, before you treat. Because in 2019 or 2020, when we entered into the market had a fire certificate. I'm not sure fire service was expecting the market to be shut down before in 2021, they would have issued a fire certificate. What the fire service is expecting of the management is to be proactive, is to be swift, is to be responsible in fixing whatever damages have happened to the fire fighting system. And I do not know why repairing those fire systems or fixing those fire systems should come at the expense of traders losing days of trading, when in actual fact, even those who supervise this shameful act of not working on the fire system for 2 years are still at post. At the end of the month, they're going for their salaries. For me, for instance, I earn on daily basis. So if I go into the market and today, I'm going to earn 50 cities or 20 cities. It's what I'll earn today. That's what I'll be earning. At the end of the month, I don't go to anybody to go and take money from them. So if you are telling me not to go to work for almost 11 days, what are you expecting me to do?
Are you saying that the committee has not done any work? So nothing has been done. Even the fire service has not done anything since the fire outbreak, even though the market was closed down by management for investigations to be carried out.
unless anybody is telling us that they go there, they are doing their work without touching anything. And I know that when there are things for maybe investigation, the first thing that is supposed to be done is to cordon off the place, so that whether someone, that place open up or not, anybody who gets close knows this place is cordoned off. We got to the market today. It was in the morning when we entered into the market. That was when management decided to go and take a thread tape to start cordoning off certain places. We even went ahead again to even call on management, then even the security ring of management, to get security personnel detailed to the affected areas, both second floor and first floor, that no, these places, there are problems. Cordon them off and get security men to ward off anybody who goes close to that place. They did nothing of that sort. Nothing. So we do not know what, how many days again that they are asking for. And at whose expense? At our expense? And you see, if when the fire happened, if they are starting calling people to order, they are starting bringing people to book. Example, the board chairman and the managing director who supervises this shameful act, this shameful disaster. If you call them to order, they are still at work. You'll be shocked to learn that the board chairman who doubles as a mayor was not in the country when the fire happened. He flew into the country, came for a board meeting, and then jumped onto a plane and flew out of the country again. The managing director is still at post. At the end of this month, he'll go for his salary. But you are telling me, the trader, who did not supervise this sinful act, that I should forgo my customer, who will now be going to my competitors. Okay. So for the past 4 or 5 days, a lot of my customers are gone.
So you feel safe returning to the same place without closure, without investigations being conducted to a conclusion?
For the investigations, what they are telling us, they are ongoing. When we spoke to the regional minister today, whom we thank so much, he spoke to the experts and asked that certain things should be put in place. Example is two fire tenders are supposed to be detailed into the market so that they could work alongside any firefighting system for now, pending working on all the fire systems that are supposed to be fixed in the market. So whenever there's any fire, so at least those two fire tenders can start working quickly before any other ones come. So he's also put in place certain measures as well.
Very well. Thank you so much for speaking to us.
Thank you.
That's Ruben Ame. He's General Secretary of the Kumasi Traders Association. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 City FM. Let's talk about the Electricity Company of Ghana, now ECG. It has been on a campaign to recover losses and ensure that people do not use power that they are not paying for. Fred Duho is our reporter who has been embedded with the ECG team, and he's joined us on the line now. Fred, you're welcome to Eyewitness News. Where and where did the task force go to today? What has it been doing, the task force?
Sandra, the task force went first to the Parliament of Ghana, where we understand they owe the Electricity Company of Ghana to the tune of 13 million Ghana cedis. So upon further engagement with them, they agreed and settled 8 million out of that. So it's left with 5 million they are supposed to settle. And even that, they've been given some ultimatum for which, if they fail, the power distributor would have no option than to move in to disconnect them. The team later moved from Parliament House to the Ghana Airport Company Limited, where they also owe the ECG, they owe 28 million Ghana cedis. Upon further engagement, they also came up with a check of $1 million, which probably, if you peg that at the current exchange rate, interbank exchange rate average of 11 point something Ghana cedis, that should be almost 11 million, we would say the Ghana airport has been able to settle the power distributor with. So they are left with almost 19 million and over to settle. And we moved from there to the Ghana Broadcasting Corporation. They also owe to the tune of 6 million Ghana cedis. But for them, they, in actual fact, had this gentleman agreement with the power distributor when the exercise began last year. This is not a new exercise, though. So they actually had that agreement with ECG so that they will settle their bills in installments. But the agreement is that they wouldn't really allow further, the bill to accrue further so that it becomes so huge that they can't really afford to pay. So as we speak, they have about 5 million on their books. I will run you by the some of the list of the companies that I have here. We have B Plus Company Limited that produces steel when you're on your way to the Subape stretch. They owe about 42 million Ghana cedis. University of Ghana owes 31 million Ghana cedis. IPS or UPSA owes 880,000 Ghana cedis. Fabric Metal owes 27 million Ghana cedis. Ferro Fabric also owes 15 million Ghana cedis. So these are some of the institutions that I would say owe the electricity company of Ghana huge sums of money, and the power distributor is not relenting to go after these people to recoup this money from their books. Don't forget, their target is that by the end of this whole exercise in 1 month, they need to recoup about 5 billion Ghana cedis that they would be able to reinvest in supply, power supply to the people of Ghana.
Thank you, Fred Duho. I believe the team will continue with this work maybe tomorrow or the days in the coming days. Do follow for us and let us know what transpires. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
That's Fred Duho. He's our correspondent in the City Newsroom who has been following the ECG team that has been engaging in disconnection exercises. Let's return to politics now. The NDC, as you know, has opened nominations for not only parliamentary candidates but also presidential candidates. We do know at least four persons actually have so far picked up nomination forms to be the flag bearer of the party. One of them is a mayor of a city we just finished talking about, Kumasi, former mayor Kojo Bonsu. His campaign team has been busy, and there's a statement that issued suggesting that he would be filing his nomination papers on Wednesday. His spokesperson is Mohammed Al Hassan. Mr. Al Hassan, you're welcome to Eyewitness News.
Thank you very much, Umaru.
How has the campaign been for your boss?
Well, it's not been easy. It's been work, running around, you know, the entire country. It's not been easy, but we're still forging on.
What are the big things he's been doing?
Well, what he's been doing is going around the country and speaking to delegates. Because, you know, in the primaries, it is delegates who are going to vote for the presidential or the flag bearer race. So he's been going around the country speaking to people from the branches, constituencies, seeking their opinion, telling them why he wants to be flag bearer and, in the future, the president of Ghana.
I see. There was a big event by your party today, what your party chairman called the True State of the Nation address. Was your candidate there? Was your boss there?
Unfortunately, he was billed to be there, but other engagements couldn't allow him to attend.
I see. Does it mean that he found those other engagements more important than going for your parties? Because we are told that Dr. Kwame Dufo at least was there. We know John Mahama is campaigning somewhere in the Ashanti region.
Exactly. So this is a national party event, and of course, for him as a member of the NDC, whatever the party is doing, he is in support of it. Like you rightly said, the ex-president is in Ashanti doing campaign. Of course, he also has, some engagement which has to do with campaigning for his flag bearership. So that is the reason why. Because as of yesterday, he wanted to attend, but I think there were some people he also had to meet with regards to the election and the delegates. So, you know, it is also very important for him to meet them, because since they are the ones that are going to vote him into power, you need not, leave them and go for a party function that we all endorse what the positions are or what we are going to tell Ghanaians.
Let's talk about the campaign theme for Kojo Bonsu. It's Reboot for Unity and Victory. That presupposes that the NDC is not united. Can you please tell us how disunited the NDC is, which Kojo Bonsu is coming to unite?
Well, this is just one of the slogans that
His Excellency Kujobos is using is not necessarily the campaign theme. Reboot, because, you know, he believes in unity. Remember, in the last two elections, when the NDC lost, he was the brain behind Unity Works, because he believes that in unity, we will be able to achieve a lot of things. And of course, in the NDC, like any other political party, there will definitely be people who are in support of somebody or not, or who are in support of a certain policy or not, or who believe things must be done in a certain way, whilst others also believe that things must be done the other way. So he believes that in unity, we should be able to come together in unity and deliver the good by beating the MPP during the general election. So these are one of his slogans that he's using for his campaign.
So this is just a slogan. It does not mean the NDC is disunited.
Well, like I said, there may be some fragmentations in the NDC.
It is a fact? Is the NDC fragmented or not?
It is a political party. Every political party has it. You can't have 100% support of everything a political party does.
So which quarters are not united against which quarters? Is it the disunity among national executives? Is it disunity amongst regional executives, or disunity amongst former flag bearers' office versus the party? Where are we seeing the cracks?
I think that it is bits and pieces from everywhere. For example, they just ended, you know, national elections, regional elections, ward elections, people who won, those who didn't win. There were some people who were in support of, you know, the some party executives. Others were also supporting parliamentarians. And then if the parliamentarian side won, that means that those who were in support of the executive side had problems. So it is fragmented all over. You can't pinpoint one. So it is from, you know, the branches, constituency, national, you know, from all over. So that's why I'm saying that bits and pieces everywhere. He believes that irrespective of whose policy or who you were supporting or whose ideology you believed in, and he won or he didn't win or his idea was taken or not, let's all unite under the umbrella.
Okay.
Because in unity, that is when we can deliver the good.
Very well. Talk to me about your nominations that you're going to file. When is it going to happen? What should people know?
Well, it's going to happen on Wednesday at 11 a.m. at the NDC National Headquarters. We will be filing because we are done with the necessary process as the party desired and required. So we will be going to file, and we're expecting all our well-wishers, sympathizers, and friends, families to come and support us whilst we file our nomination for the flag bearership race.
Thank you so much for speaking to us. That's Mohammed Alhassan. He speaks for NDC flag bearer aspirant Kojo Bonsu. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. Business News is next. And then when we come back, we'll talk about Chris Hilton, the new man on top of the job to ensure Ghana gets a trophy, at least one for the first time in more than 30 years. Can he do it? Please stay with us.
Let your voice be heard on Eyewitness News on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag Eyewitness News.
Get the details. Every significant financial transaction, every market movement, and all the policies that affect your business. City Business News. Be informed.
It's time now for City Business News on Eyewitness News, powered by citybusinessnews.com. Let's settle for the details. Within just 11 days to the end of the month, the government is racing against time to secure an International Monetary Fund bailout program. The President, Nana Akufo-Addo, has consistently reiterated his government's commitment towards securing a deal by close of March this year. Finance Minister Ken Ofori-Atta is reported to be leading a team of government delegations to China to secure some debt forgiveness as part of the requirement to securing the IMF deal. Economist Courage Boti believes if some finality is brought to the China conversation, Ghana might be able to meet its set timelines for the IMF bailout.
I think China is the at this moment the big elephant in the room. From the look of things, the process leading up to getting bond level approval will mean that we have to engage the bilateral creditor committee, or call it the official creditor committee for the bilateral creditors. So far, China hasn't played ball. Maybe these rounds of engagement might yield to them agreeing to something and then constituting that creditor committee. I don't know what length of time it will take and what the negotiations will center around, even with the creditor committee that will culminate into that letter stating that we're giving you financing assurances. And again, I don't know what the president's briefing is. The reason he keeps saying that by end of March, we should be able to get that. So I wouldn't say it's impossible, because everything is possible. Assuming the engagement with China goes through successfully, they get a creditor committee set up this week, and we do overtime with engagements and all of that, both in person and virtual, yes, by within 10 days, if all parties are willing and are cooperating, we should be able to get that much needed creditor, if you like, assurances from these creditors to get the program going.
Courage Boti is an economist. Meanwhile, economist Professor Lord Mensah is of the view that Ghana is unlikely to secure the IMF program this month due to the present dynamics of the process. He has been explaining why.
What we're supposed to do are not something that we can give out timelines. If you look at the happenings, we're going to negotiate on our debt. We're going to make sure that we restructure our debt as far as the international, you know, debt are concerned. And if you look at our components, the diversification of the international debt that we owe, the diversity of the international debt that we owe, I don't think we can achieve that within 1 week. So there's nothing crucial within this week. We just have to give ourselves time. And all that we can do is that we need to start having some, you know, self-corrections or in-country corrections to ensure that at least we position ourselves for the creditor to know that we are ready to renegotiate on our debt.
That was economist Professor Lord Mensah. Moving on, stakeholders within the pensions fund space are pushing for an efficient way of distributing funds in the country to ensure economic growth. According to the chief executive officer of Axis Pensions Limited Trust Limited, Ifeoyinwari, pension fund managers currently allocate over 90% of their assets to government securities, a situation which crowds out the private sector. In an interview with City Business News on the sidelines of the fifth edition of Pension Strategy Conference, Ifeoyinwari Pari proposed that the private sector should be a beneficiary of the pension funds to build the economy and create more employment.
If you look at developed countries, the driver of their success is private sector investing. In the US, pension funds allocate just 18% of their assets to government securities. In the UK, it's about 41%. If you just suppose that against what we have in Ghana, we have 94% of our pension fund assets sitting with government. So the question is, which of the economic agents is driving growth? Is it government? Is government more productive? Because our role is to allocate capital to the most productive agents of the economy. If you look at government expenditure over the years, it appears even capital expenditure, which is supposed to be the growth generating investments of government, is only taking up 16%. In the past, I think it was actually 9%. So it is not efficient for us to continue to give money to government just for expenditure. It's like investing in a company that is not generating any profit. All they do is spending on profligacy. I think our attitude as money managers in the past in shying away from the private sector has resulted in the situation we have today.
That was the chief executive officer of Axis Pensions Trust Limited, Ifeoyinwari, speaking there. And that's all for City Business News on Eyewitness News, which was powered by citybusinessnews.com. My name is Nashika Caesar. Up next is Point Blank.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
This is Point Blank on Eyewitness News. My name is Umaru Sandama. Tonight on Point Blank, we're talking about Ghana sports, Ghana football, the Black Stars. There's a new coach in town. Chris Hilton is the name. He was with a team in Qatar. We came home before even the whistle could go off. He's been given the bigger job now. Moving from advisor to head coach of the Ghana Black Stars. The unveiling ceremony was done in the Ashanti regional capital, Kumasi. Evans Ofuchumanso is there for us. We're touching base with him to get some reactions there. But let's start off from the studio, and I have in studio Gabby Ofer of the City Sports Desk. Gabby, welcome to Iron Desk.
Thank you, Sander.
Chris Hilton.
Yeah.
Chris Hilton, who is that? For those who don't know much about the managers of our football, what do we know about him?
Well, he has Ghanaian roots, so basically Irish. He's coached a lot more in the Ghana, that's the English Premier League.
Okay.
So he's had good stints with Spurs, that's Tottenham Hotspur, Brighton, Norwich. So for the lovers of the Premier League, I think that in terms of his tactical prowess, I think that people know what he brings to the Black Stars. And I've always said that if you look at the coaches that have come in or we've had in the last 6 years, I think that he's by far one of the best coaches we have. Yes. In terms of pedigree.
So in terms of his performance abroad, in terms of his performance with clubs abroad.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, we are talking about a coach who come in to give the national team some bit of an identity. And that's what we've been lacking. In the last...
Explain identity.
Identity. So, I mean, a perfect example was what Siki Akono said, that he was coming to do agro football. Mm-hmm. And that would come with a system where it means that if I'm to compare, so maybe the tiki-takers with what Pep does. A perfect example is Antonio Conte. We know him to sit very deep and play on the wings and that kind of thing. And Chris Hilton is somebody who has similar... tactical prowess or identity, you want to put it. So, I mean, we saw where CK took us to. It wasn't the best of performances. We turned our attention to our ex. That's Milovan Rajevac. Based on the performance he did in 2010, we brought him back, his second stint. We failed woefully at the AFCON. We were unable to progress out of the group. We lost to Comoros and that kind of thing. And you see, all these coaches, I'm not talking about it just being the performance. It's more of, okay, so what is Ghana known for? I mean, I've spoken to a lot of big fishes in the Ghana football, and they talk about Ghana must have an identity. I think the last time I heard one was from Mohamed Polo, talking about we've been used to playing a 4-4-2 system. Mm-hmm. So that's more similar to having a style of play. So when I mention Umaru Sanda, I know that, okay, this is the kind of system you play. And that is what I think that Chris Hilton will bring on board.
Because he has a technical expertise.
Exactly. And you see, people have raised concerns about he being the technical advisor with Tuo Tuadu.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always said that there is one thing with you giving instructions, and there's the other thing with you having the job to do. So we all don't know whether if Otuado was actually taking instructions from Chris Hilton, this time around he has the job at his hands.
Were there competitors, though, for this job? Were there persons who came up and said they wanted a job, and then the GFA still settled on Chris Hilton?
Well, from what I'm monitoring, I think that government, a lot of the government officials wanted Chris Hilton to take charge.
Okay.
I think that they looked at his connection with Ghanaians of players who play in the English Premier League of Ghanaian descent. So the likes of Callum Hudson-Odoi, the likes of Tariq Lamptey, and certain players who were pulling their legs not to play for the Black Stars. So I think that governments were looking at that part to try and bring that players into the current squad to help us be competitive. So in terms of, I think they looked at that and the identity I'm talking about, his tactical prowess, they can combine that and get him to lead the national team. But the GFA had their own ideas. I mean, we had Kett traveling all the way to Germany to speak to Otuado at Borussia Dortmund. And I think that the communication from Dortmund was that to have him for the AFCON. He qualified us to the World Cup. That's for the World Cup. He qualified us to the World Cup I think it was...
And did a terrible job.
Yes. So, I mean, it's always been Chris Hughton.
And said goodbye to us.
You get it. It's always been Chris Hughton. I don't know why. I mean, there's always been talks about...
He should have been the one...
Yeah, for me, I think that's my opinion. I think that Chris Hughton...
Let me go to Evans. Evans Ofochukwumanso is also with the City Sports team. He was at the unveiling ceremony today in Kumasi. Evans, you're welcome to Eyewitness News. I'm having Gabby Ofe in studio. Gabby's view is that finally we're going to have a football identity for Ghana. Okay, I'm told that I don't have Evans. I actually do. He believes that Chris Hughton should have been the guy from the onset and that we didn't have to experiment with Otuado, who abandoned us after we crashed. Is that the same view you hold, or you hold a contrary view?
Well, I think that it would have been difficult to ignore Otuado ahead of the World Cup in Qatar. Yes, he was just supposed to be a stopgap coach for the Nigeria World Cup qualifier in March 2022, whilst we look for a substantive coach. But see, with the way he faced that Nigeria assignment, how he was able to marshal his boys to draw here in Ghana, go all the way to Abuja and seek that qualification and win that qualification ahead of the Super Eagles. I think reasonably, it would just have been so unfair not to pick Otuado as your coach for the World Cup. Yes, he didn't have the best of experience ahead of the World Cup. His CV was not that rich as Chris Hughton, and that's why the DFA tried their possible best to form a solid backroom staff for him with Chris Hughton as the technical advisor. I just thought that looking at what he had done, common sense just showed that yes, he may not have been the best person on paper with his best CV, but what he did with that short time he had with the Black Stars for the Nigeria game, it was just prudent to just give him the job for the World Cup. No one at that moment would have taken that risk to take Otuado off the job and given it to Chris Hughton, because if things had backfired with Chris Hughton as the main coach of the Black Stars, then there would have been that conversation that why was Otuado taken off the job before the World Cup when he had qualified the team. So it was just a gamble that GFA couldn't take at that moment. And I think that we've seen how things ended up for Otuado. Now they have a fresh slate to try and start afresh with Chris Hughton as they've always wanted. So for me, I think common sense just was right for Otuado to lead us to the World Cup.
I see. What does he bring to the table, though, now that he's the man in charge? He's not advising. He's actually supposed to take charge. What does he bring to the table, you reckon?
Well, he has, I think his CV is very rich CV. I'm struggling to compare his CV to some of the Black Stars coaches who come on board with such a rich CV. Milovan Rajevac, before he came to coach the Black Stars in 2010, was really not up there like the way Chris Hughton is. I look at the likes of Kwesi Appiah, T.K. Akono. It's difficult to really have a coach who has been with the Black Stars with such a rich CV.
Well, what is a rich CV, though? Because you mentioned, okay, so Gabby here has mentioned he was with Spurs, he was with Brighton and Hove, and also...
Exactly.
But what trophy has he won?
You see, arguably, the English Premier League is the best league. So for you to coach in that league, meaning that you are part of the elite coaches in the world.
But you coach and you're at the bottom, that's nothing, oh?
Well, he had quite a very good time with a class like Brighton and Hove Albion. And as such, you could feel that once he's been able to have his tactical prowess going up against top managers in the English Premier League, which you all agree, that's the top league in the world, then you look at what he brings on board, meaning that he has scored at the highest level, unlike our previous coaches.
Anyway, at the end of the day, the question would be, what did he bring home? Did he at least take Brighton or Spurs to top four, at least?
Well, looking at the time he took on Brighton, he helped them with the promotion from the Championship to the Premier League, and then he steadied the ship for a while for them in the English Premier League. He also did a fine job at Newcastle United. So, The point is to try and do this in the English Premier League and not just any other league. Means that you are a top manager. That's the key point here. And the action of what he brings on board, aside that's quite a rich CV, I may say I was quite disappointed with the response he gave as to the brand of football we should expect from his Black Stars. His response was that he's just going to create a winning Black Stars team. So it doesn't matter whether we are ultra defensive or highly offensive. His key point is to try and win at all costs. And I think that it's not going to be easy. So you needed to have at least manage our expectations. That yes, that's the mindset of creating a winning Black Stars team, but it's not easy, and that if things don't go as we expect in some games, we should be able to let some of these things go by. But to tell us that he's looking to create a winning mentality and also not really addressing the issue of interference in the Black Stars selection by the GFC hierarchy was also quite disappointing. But to tell us that whatever has happened before his tenure is in the past and that he's a head coach now, when clearly he's been around the team for 1 year, he's seen what happened to Otuado. So we're looking at the fact that I wanted to hear his clear objective as to whether he knows of any interference in the Black Stars technical job role by the GFA hierarchy. And the answer he gave for me, I think he should come again in terms of his responses. But I'm quite elated with the fact that he's promising to get the best of players like Thomas Tepati, whose Black Stars performances of late haven't been the best. And I think that we're just waiting to see how his first game goes against Angola. How he starts that game is very important because we are watching keenly the battle that he'll be going through with Angola coach, how he reads the game, his in-play tactics, how the team transitions.
We'll talk about Angola, but just a few things before we get to that level. The contract that he signed with the GFA or the government of Ghana, I'm told that there is something different about the contract, the number of months that the contract was signed for, the earlier offer that was made to him, which offer was rejected before a new offer was brought up and so on. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so basically it's a performance contract. So it's a 21-month contract from now till December 31, 2024, meaning that during that period, there'll be one AFCON for him to be at, and hopefully also start the World Cup qualifiers. For me, 21 months for a coach in a performance contract, a coach like Chris Hughton, is quite disappointing because I thought that arguably he comes on board with the best sort of record amongst all our managers, bar Ivan Grant, who was manager for Chelsea before coming to the Black Stars level. So yes, that's what he has on his hands now. We understand that he was offered a 1 year contract initially. He wanted a 3 year contract, and now they settled on a 21 month contract with the objective of a renewal if his performance is satisfactory at the end of this tenure. So,
when we hired Otuado, we gave him a direct job, take us to the World Cup. Do we have a direct assignment for this guy?
It's also one of the disappointments of this press conference today. I think that there were some areas of the press conference where I was sitting quietly and I'm like, my goodness, what are we really doing here when we're not really clear on the objective we are setting for the coach? We try to probe further to ask the GFA, what is the clear objective for Chris Hughton? He needed to go and win the next AFCON in Ivory Coast. No one could really boldly say that's the objective of the coach. And also, how much is he being paid? We're not really told in entirety.
We don't know how much is going to be paid.
Absolutely, Umaru, we don't know how much Chris Hughton is being paid officially.
But in the past, we knew this, right? Because it's the taxpayer who pays these players, even though the person is hired by the GFA, the government of Ghana makes the payments.
Absolutely. I think that when it comes to the Black Stars coaches and their salary, we've always had issues of lack of transparency in terms of how much they are taking. We know Chris, we know Ivan Grant was taking $50,000. We know Sikia Kono and Coach Gwesiapia took less of that amount. Chris Hughton, we don't know how much. There's a speculation, so unconfirmed speculations that is in the area of $50,000 as well. But that's why we wanted the GFA to come clear today, at least to confirm or reject such a figure and let us understand how much is being paid by the government and what goes into all this. And as such, so it's quite disappointing from my perspective not to know how much is taken.
Was the question asked of the GFA directly?
For the amount, when the GFA started speaking, we were expecting them to really give us details of the contract. They didn't really get into the amount. They just spoke about the contract duration and they left it there.
Let me come back to the target.
We tried to probe on the target for him, but we asked the GFA communication director the target for Chris Hughton, but that question was thrown back to Chris to answer it himself. And quite surprising how the employer gives that question to the employee to answer his targets. And well, for him, he says he's just going to do what to do his best for Ghana. Disappointed.
Let me, please be on the line. Let me come in studio. Gabby, what immediately does Chris Hughton have to do, and what will be your own targets for him?
Well, I think that immediately he has to stamp his authority on in terms of collapse and player selection. Look, we need to. There are certain players who I think that are performing, and you see, collapse must be done based on merits during his tenure, because the story is about some players having issues with the GFA and that kind of thing. I think that under Hughton's tenure, that is what I'm looking forward to. Finally, we have to have a halt to that thing. And also, I think that, in my opinion, I think that if I'm to give him the target of winning the AFCON, I think that is early days yet. Because, Sunday, last time we won the AFCON was 1982. I think that...
Before you were born.
Yes, exactly. I've never seen an AFCON trophy before. I think that the immediate target must for him, yes, qualify us to the AFCON, but it should be a long-term plan. That is, he's supposed to build a team. If Senegal is anything to go by, I think that if the FA can really get the blueprint of the Senegal national team, that is what they are supposed to do.
So you are a long termist.
Yes, I'm not looking at a short term. That is why I have issues.
You're not interested in getting a trophy next year or two.
That is why I have issues with the contract he's been given, because I think that in that
it should be long
short term spell. If you are to tax him to win the AFCON, look, he's not a magician. Even if you bring Pep here, it will take him time
to build a team.
Yes.
Evans, you agree that we shouldn't be expecting anything now, and that the hope shouldn't be that high, at least not immediately. We should be targeting for a longer period, maybe in 2032 or something.
Well, I disagree with Gabby on that occasion. I disagree with him that we need to have a long-term target for Chris Hughton. His 21 months is even a short-term contract. Clearly, it tells you that the DFA wants him to win or do well instantly. Because if you're given 21 years to justify your inclusion, it means do something now. And so for me, his obvious target is to try and go to that AFCON, get to the grand finale and to win the trophy. Yes, to qualify now is no big deal. I think that any good coach can qualify the Black Stars to the AFCON. To do well at the AFCON, that's why he's here as a top manager, because of his rich experience in the job. And I keep saying this, that matches are won by coaches. Yes, you may have the players at your disposal, but if your coach is not the best of coaches, like Chelsea are going through at the moment with Graham Potter, you may have the best of materials, but if your coach is not top class, you are going to struggle. I think that if I'm granted a top class manager, he should be able to go head to head against the likes of Aliou Cisse of Senegal, who just won the AFCON, Jamel Belmadi, who won the AFCON for Algeria. Cannot say he's a top class manager that pursued him. So once we've always said that he's also a top class manager on the African continent, he'll be facing managers who, to me, I think are lower or below his CV level. So he needs to go there, and I always believe we have the materials. No one can tell me that on the African continent the materials we have now is not good enough. We have Mohamed Kudus, there's Thomas Tepate. We have enough quality in our team to rub shoulders to the big boys of African football. And with Chris Hughton's CV and what he brings on board, with the experience he's gathered and all that, I think that, yes, if coaching is on point, if man management is on point, if our talent are able to reach or play above their level, we should be able to go to Ivory Coast. And also, an area where the weather condition favors us, because we're just playing
next door.
So we don't have to worry about weather conditions or acclimatization and all that.
In 30 seconds, the big game on Thursday, would that be the game that we use to define whether this guy is our guy or we can determine his failure from Thursday? Do you think it's too early to use the game to judge him?
Well, how it starts is very important for me. So, for me, it's a good aspect to judge what he brings on board. How he starts that game will let me understand what he hopes to bring on board. He says he's going to build a winning team. So, if that's the case, he needs to start winning ASAP.
Thank you, Evans Ofochumanso of the City Sports Team. Gabby, your concluding comment, the first test for him is Thursday.
Yeah.
Is it too early to say that he has done well or done bad? Depends on how he succeeds or fails.
No, I don't think it's too early for him, because he's been in and around the team. He was the technical advisor, so obviously he knows a large chunk of the current squad he's called.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, the thing called the new manager bounce, I think that would set in. And of course, you're going to see glimpses of what he wants to do with the national team. So I think it will be a mixture of that too. And then going forward, we can judge him properly. Yeah.
Thank you so much. That's Gabby Ofair of the City Sports Desk. Earlier you heard Evans Ofochumanso, who is in Kumasi, where a new national coach was unveiled, Chris Hughton it is. We pray for him that he succeeds at the job, so that for the first time, Gabby and myself and Evans will get to see a real trophy which is a Ghana trophy, not the one that we see on TV. Last time we won that was in Libya, 100 years ago. Well, not 100, but 1982. That's Eyewitness News. My name is Umaru Sanda Amadu. I was here with Nashi Kasiza. Production by Beverly London and Kobna Wells. In technical support from Daniel Squashi. New media support from Edwin Kwakofi. We return tomorrow at 7:30 GMT. Thank you for listening. Have a good night.
City News, we speak first. Reach our hotline on 0302-224959 and get interactive on Facebook, City 97.3 FM, and on Twitter at City 973.